Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. Welcome to Thanksgiving week, blah, blah, blah. All pleasantries, blah, blah, blah. Hope everybody enjoys their travel, blah, blah, blah. This week we've got in Texas, just completing the old Texas Triangle, which I thought never happened anymore. But then again, the Warriors just went and did the Texas Triangle, and they, in good old-fashioned form, got beaten all three stops in Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio. And joining us from San Antonio is our Warriors beat writer, Nick Friedel. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hello, guys. The Warriors' week from hell is officially over, and I think everybody is better for that.
You're like the angel of death. Every team you cover stinks.
It all feels very familiar when things start to go bad.
That's right. That other laugh is from Tim Bontemps, who is in Philadelphia. I have no idea who the Sixers playing today.
They're playing the Phoenix Suns as Joel Embiid gets his first shot at obliterating DeAndre Ayton tonight.
Oh. And you traveled down to Philly to see that.
I did. Traveled down from Boston yesterday.
Where the Celtics are having some issues, and we will discuss that in a minute. Also joining us in Los Angeles and running the show is Andrew Hahn, and we've got Kyrie in Bristol, flipping the switches. So Nick has a flight back home. I'm sure you're looking forward to get back to the West Coast, but so before we lose him, I just wanted to talk about the Warriors. I thought it was interesting last night that they were talking about not having their joy, because I feel like when they play with joy, it's one of their great weapons. And, you know, they're also missing two all-stars right now. And I'm really kind of worried about Draymond's toe injury, because when I hear toe injury, it's kind of like hearing hamstring injury. Toe injuries don't go away very fast, and I don't think they've said a whole lot about it, so maybe you can shed some light on that, Nick. Although, having said that, they still have two All-Stars left. In fact, two Hall of Famers, in my mind, two Hall of Famers in their prime, in Klay and Durant. They just happened to shoot the ball terribly last night. I think they were like under 40% as a group, and they were some awful, like 4 of 20 from three-point range. But they've lost their joy, is what they say. So, Nick, give us your assessment. I mean, we've talked about Draymond and Durant ad nauseum. We get that. We know it. But what's going on actually in the rectangle of the court right now with these guys?
Well, they're not getting enough space to make shots, and when they do get open looks, they're missing. I think in the last three games in this Texas Triangle, they were 18 for 77 from beyond the arc. And we're so used to seeing the Warriors bounce the ball all over the place and get open looks, and it's just not the case. Durant made the point that they're still trying to work newer players like Jonas Jerebko and younger players like Looney.
Jerebko is playing a lot bigger role than they ever envisioned. I know it's because of injuries, but man.
Absolutely. But, you know, Damian Lee, a two-way guy, was up over the weekend here. I mean, they're trying to get these newer guys into spots that they're not comfortable with, and frankly, they really shouldn't be in, because if you have Steph and you have Draymond, you don't have these guys playing bigger minutes. So on top of the emotional issues of the week, and I can't stress enough how much the whole KD Draymond incident seemed to rock the core of this group. On top of that, they're just not playing very well right now. So they're hopeful that they get Draymond back from this toe injury on Wednesday against Oklahoma City. But to your point, B, it's something that's going to linger all year. I mean, that's what happens. And this was Kerr's whole point. We have to sit him out until he can shake it fully, but they're not sure he's going to be able to shake it fully, because with toe injuries, like hamstring injuries, they just kind of hang on for a while. As for Steph, he seems to be getting better and better. He's doing more individual work on the floor. But he's still at least another week away. And Kerr's whole point has been that he's trying to remind the media, and he's also trying to remind his team, we're in November. I mean, Kerr has always said, we're playing the long game here. We know we're going to be playing deep into the playoffs. We know that this team has a chance to do something incredibly special in trying to win back-to-back-to-back titles. So we're not going to rush anybody back. And to the point about Joy, Kerr in the last week at every turn has tried to pump the positivity. He knows what he's trying to do publicly because as the rest of the basketball world wonders, all right, is the sky falling there? Here's Kerr saying, I like the way our effort has been after that Houston game, which is miserable. I like the way the guys are trying to work and find themselves, and we're going to get out of this. And I believe from a basketball perspective, that's going to happen. I mean, KD and Draymond, before last night's game in San Antonio, they're sitting there talking about Alex Smith's injury. Like, it was just a totally regular
which was really
conversation.
Bad. Did you allow yourself awful. To watch the video?
No, hell no. Come on now.
Fontemps, did you watch the video?
I stay away from all of those videos. The only thing I've ever seen of them was the Gordon Hayward injury last year, which literally happened right in front of me. Otherwise, I stay away from them on purpose.
Not
come on, B. You're talking to a guy who had a tib-fib injury himself playing football.
You did.
Snapped
my leg in half.
I forgot
I didn't know that.
Oh,
yeah.
I know the story. Oh, God.
My two buddies on senior night, they missed their blocks, and our running back, Pooh Bear, he fell into my leg. And instantly, it's gone. So I want no part of watching that stuff. But, you know.
So, Nick, how long, how bad was that recovery? Senior year, so you were like in a cast your whole senior year?
No, they put a rod in. They put a rod in, and that was that. I mean, I was able to walk like a few weeks later.
Wow.
I never did the cast. But then I got to Syracuse, and I would wake up at 8 a.m. for my class freshman year, and I felt like there was an echo in my leg because it was so cold and the rod wasn't feeling great. So a couple years later, they had to take the rod out, but it was not the recovery that it might have been for Joe Theismann 30 plus years ago. But anyway, yeah, on a broader note.
I did not know that. I'm so sorry to hear that.
there is some normalcy as much as there could be a week later within. I think everybody is still trying to help these guys kind of come together more from a basketball perspective. And whether or not KD stays or goes, I mean, that conversation wasn't really going to go anywhere. It's just heightened now because of what happened in Los Angeles. But in the short term, I feel like you get Draymond back, you get Steph back here in the near future, and everything will be okay. If it's not at that point, then, guys, well, then the Warriors have much deeper issues, but Kerr, for his part, is holding to, you get these guys back, everything will be fine.
Tim, you know the Warriors really well. I would say that watching them play, just like in the game in Dallas the other night, I mean, Durant had a 12-footer from, you know, the lane where he was squared and he just was short. And then Clay had what, Nick? Maybe like a 15-footer from the baseline? Again, perfectly squared. And either of those shots go in, they may, you know, force overtime and or win that game. Like, I'm in agreement here. I mean, I think they've got long-term issues with whether Durant wants to stay. But in terms of, like, getting out of this funk, I don't know. You guys tell me. I don't think them losing this three games is a direct relation, direct line because of Durant, Draymond's issues. No. I just think they're in a slump right now. But what do you think?
The Warriors in the Steve Kerr era are 254-47 when Steph Curry plays. I believe they are now 22-22 when he doesn't.
There's a stat.
The problem. That is the problem with the Warriors. Steph Curry is not healthy. You mentioned it before I took this job. I was out in the Bay. The last 2 years, I watched this team a lot. When Steph Curry plays, they are the greatest team I've ever seen. When he doesn't play, they are a pretty boring team that has is very uneven, particularly on offense, and is prone to funks like this. And this is what they are. Curry is the thing that makes that team go. And this also goes back to something I've said since the summer, which is that I believe the DeMarcus Cousins signing was a mistake. I thought that was the case this summer. I think it's the case now. The reason why is something you said when you were talking to Nick. when you mentioned Jonas Jerebko is playing a bigger role than the Warriors ever envisioned. Frankly, he really isn't. He's playing a little bit larger one because Draymond's hurt, but he has to play a lot for them because they don't have any depth. You look at their bench, Alphonso McKinney was their eighth guy until he got hurt. And Alphonso McKinney couldn't play for the Raptors last year.
But they didn't think Jerebko was going to be starting.
Well, no, that's what I mean. Draymond being hurt means he's playing a little bit more, but he was still their seventh guy for the first couple weeks of the season. And that all goes back to this team has no depth up and down the roster.
Which is why Patrick McCaw played hardball. And we can, you know, I don't want to have a Patrick McCaw discussion.
Listen, Patrick McCaw, his argument makes no sense because he was horrible last year. And if he just had signed a contract, he would have been their seventh guy, and he would have played this year. And if he was any good at all, he would have been playing a lot, right?
He'd have been playing a lot right now.
Yeah. So they just don't have any depth, and now they've got Cousins out, they've got Draymond out, they've got Steph out. So look who they're rolling out there. They're playing Quinn Cook. Like Quinn Cook had, I think, 12 shots yesterday or something.
Yeah,
right. Like you're not a very good team if Quinn Cook is getting shots. So, they have.
He's been playing pretty well, though, in Quinn Cook's defense.
No, he's fine. He's fine. But, like, again, if you can have two superstars out there in Clay and KD, but if you have out there around them a bunch of guys that are borderline NBA players, you're the Oklahoma City Thunder. Well, what are they? They're a team that's kind of floating around 500, right?
Oklahoma City has the second best record in the West, I think, or maybe the third best.
Well, at this point, that means they're like, what? 10-8. It feels like everybody in the West is like the same record.
How about Bontemps going to the East and then just completely ignoring the West and ignoring there's like seven teams that are like 10-5 or better. I would say that, you know, Oklahoma City, by the way, is playing awesome defense. Awesome defense. I think they're the number one defensive team in the league over the last like 8 games or so, or top 2, and I think they've won 8 of 9 or something like that. But anyway, yes, I think, you know, I saw a stat on the plus minus of Curry over the last 3 years, which is like they're plus 18-20 or something with him in the game, and with him out of the game, I think they're in a minus. So I think that's true. I think it unlocks everything. And, you know, I've said many, many times that I think Draymond is their most important player because he's a guy that, you know, he's the linchpin that enables them to play that way. But certainly you could look at those stats like Bontemps just brought up and that plus minus stat, and you could say that Curry is actually their most important player. And maybe Draymond is their player that allows them to play their style of basketball, but maybe it's Curry who is the sort of the rocket fuel that lets them take off. But, you know, either way, they've had a couple of games here. What, they score 80? What were the point totals on this trip, Nick? Like, did they crack 100 in all 3 games? I don't even think they did that.
Not in Houston. Houston B is the only game where the Draymond KD, the emotions of those last few days, I think there was a hangover there because they just didn't look right that whole game. And Draymond comes out afterwards. He's like, I played horribly. So he knew it. But in Dallas and in San Antonio, they had chances to win those games. And I believe the offense, I think they cracked 100 both times. But they don't look like they have any kind of rhythm right now. And it all ties back into, you brought up the joy factor. The craziest part about all of this to me is 2-3 weeks ago, they're all talking about players, coaches, how much different this season is, the start of this season.
For sure. They were, yes, that was like what they had rediscovered. I was talking about it on Sports and like they've re-weaponized joy, and now it's just so, you know, it's everything's fleeting. Everything's sensitive. All right. So let's talk about a troubled team a little bit in the East, a good troubled team in the East, which is a team that Tim has been around with, the Celtics. They had a great win over the Raptors. Was that on Thursday night, Tim?
Friday night.
Great win over the Raptors. A really high-spirited game. Really needed it. They were down, and they came back and made it happen. And, you know, Kyrie had been playing great. And then they had a loss to the Jazz on Saturday. And Tim, you were at the game, and tell us what happened afterwards in the locker room. I think they only scored 86 points.
They scored 86 points. In the fourth quarter, Brad Stevens, fed up with his starters, put in Brad Wanamaker, Daniel Tice, Gershon Yabusele, and, I can't even remember who the fourth guy was. Oh, Semi Ojeleye.
Was it still a game at that point?
It was close enough that the Celtics could have maybe come back. I mean, I was at the game in Phoenix the week before when they were down by, it was Phoenix instead of Utah.
Well, that was an outlier, true.
They were down by about the same amount with 9 minutes to go and came back and tied the game, went to overtime and won. So it wasn't, I mean, it was like a 17 point game with 9 minutes to go. So unlikely you come back, but you at least have a chance. But Brad Stevens puts those guys out there with Kyrie Irving for the vast majority of the fourth quarter. Then after the game, Brad Stevens, who never says anything, accuses his team of not having any toughness and says that, pins confidence issues on some of his guys, saying that they need to just focus on, doing the little things instead of worrying about shots going in or not, which was a pretty direct shot at Jaylen Brown in particular. And then Kyrie Irving in the locker room.
Why was that a shot?
Because Jaylen Brown has been horrible, for one thing. He's shooting 36% from the field and 27% from three. He'd gone two for his last 18 over the Raptors game in that game. And he has generally just floated around and looked disengaged because he appears to have his head down because he's missing a million shots. And then after that, Kyrie Irving in the locker room, attacked the Celtics young guys. Specifically called out Jason Tatum for, on the first possession of the game, setting the tone by getting Derek Favors in a one-on-one matchup on the perimeter, saying he expected him to drive. Tatum instead shot a 28-footer, saying that the young guys on the team were a year younger last year, are trying to basically show they're better players this year and trying too hard and pressing too much. To your point, the night before, the Celtics had this great victory over the Raptors. Tatum had played well in the first time in a while. Kyrie was incredible. Gordon Hayward had played well. It was this very feel-good atmosphere in the locker room. And then the next night, there's just broadsides being leveled all over the place, and the Celtics are
as much as they do.
Kind of a weird spot. Yes, right. As much as the Celtics do, which is never.
I think it's interesting about Tatum and Brown. So I really thought the guy that would have to sacrifice his shots when Hayward came back was going to be Jaylen Brown. I mean, Jaylen Brown, to me, my evaluation of him, not that I am, a general manager, but my evaluation of him after his rookie year was that he's going to be a borderline elite level defender, who would occasionally have breakout offensive games, but I didn't think was going to be an offensive factor. Something more than a 3-and-D player, but certainly less than a Jimmy Butler type. And then, he was so good last year, off and on, but a lot of on, that I was like, boy, he had elevated in my mind. And I thought, well, he is going to be the guy who's going to struggle because he's going to take a step back. The interesting thing is, as you mentioned, his shooting percentages are way down. And, I don't have the Kevin Pelton, data about his shot quality, but he's getting the same amount of shots. He's playing a little bit less minutes, but he's getting the exact same amount of three-pointers and the same amount of overall shots, which is still only like 11 or 12 a game. But, it's not like it's gone to 8 a game. He's just making way less of them. And then Tatum is actually getting a lot more shots. He's getting 3 more shots a game and shooting about 5% lower. Now, if you watch, he is just taking some, in my mind, wild shots, isolation shots, and his three-point percentage is dipped.
You might say.
You might say that. Those are the two guys, we kind of thought, I'm one of these people that's not 100% in the guaranteed Kyrie's going to be a Celtic next year column. For about 10 different reasons. It's not that I don't believe him that he's intending to stay, but I just think that that's a more volatile situation. And I'm certainly not believing that Gordon Hayward, I don't exactly know what his future is, but I would have thought that no matter what happened, that Tatum and Brown were going to be the cornerstones going forward. And now I'm like, these guys got to play better. You know, they lived in this sort of expectation-free world last year where they just were overachieving almost from day one, and that they just blew us all away. But now that we look at them as like, you know, I was thinking Tatum was going to make the All-Star team this year, and I thought that Jaylen Brown was going to be a contender, and they are not playing like that right now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they have a lot of problems. They have a team full of guys that don't really get to the rim. They have a lot of team, they have a team full of guys that don't really pass the ball other than Gordon Hayward. And he's obviously just coming back from his injury. They are having Gordon Hayward come back from his injury, which is a factor. And to your point, they have a lot of guys taking a lot of shots. I think if you look at their team, they have, I want to say they have six or seven guys averaging at least eight or nine shots a game.
Let's take a look. Let's go right down the list. Kyrie Irving, 17 a game. Let's see how that ranks to years past. To years past, last year he averaged 18 a game. The year before in Cleveland he averaged 20. So it's slightly down, but he's averaging 17. Tatum, as I mentioned, averaging 13 up from 10. Al Horford averaging 10. Jaylen Brown averaging 12. Gordon Hayward averaging 9. Boy, let's see what that was down from his Utah days. He averaged 16 his last year in Utah. That's way down. Obviously he's coming back. Marcus Morris averaging 10, which seems like too many to me.
Marcus Morris is shooting 50% from the field and I think 48% from three, and the Celtics still have a terrible offense.
Right. He's actually shooting less than last year. He is shooting 46% from three, but very good, averaging more than two makes a game.
The other night.
Yeah, averaging two makes a game.
And Terry Rozier, ballpark, right?
Averaging just under nine a game, which is also down from last year. He's only shooting, I did not realize how, he's shooting
38% or so? 37.
I'll bump it up for him. 37%.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of guys that aren't shooting well. And here's the thing. If you watch a Celtic game, they take a lot of bad shots. They take a lot of mid-range shots. They take a lot of threes. They never, I mean, not that a lot of threes are bad, but they take some contested threes because a lot of times, because they can't get to the rim, they're kind of passing the ball around and then jacking up a shot later in the shot clock, and it's not a quality look. And, no, that really is what a lot of this, to me, comes down to, is they're not getting good enough shots.
They rank 27th in the league in free throw attempts.
And that's even up. I think they were 29th before they had a big surge at the end of the Raptor game, and I think shot like 27 or 28 in the overtime game, and that bumped them up a little bit. But they don't get to the line. They don't get to the rim, and so they just don't get a lot of efficient shots, and then they have a lot of guys who aren't shooting well, and that adds up to them not being a very good offense. And I made the Kobe joke before because Jason Tatum this summer went and worked out with Kobe for a while, and you watch him play now, and he's not passing the ball, he's not creating shots for other people, and he's taking a lot of inefficient mid-range shots that are not very good looks, and a lot of them aren't going.
He's taking Kobe shots, is what he's taking.
He's taking Kobe shots. So, I mean, look, the Celtics have a lot of talent, but I look at the mix, and I just don't really see where the offensive improvement is going to come from. And, you know, for all of the expectations that this team had, you know, I know we're not quite at 20 games yet, but we're still at 16 games with them, and they're 24th or 25th in the league in offense. I mean, at some point, the numbers are what they are. And
well, some of these guys got to shoot better percentages. Some of these guys got to shoot better percentages.
Which will help, but Marcus Morris is also probably going to shoot 30% at some point for a month, too.
That's true. Marcus Smart, by the way, his shots have cut in half. What was that, Nick?
I know they're having problems, and I know they haven't played to the level that I think we all expected to start the season. But as I watched that game the other night, the end of that Raptors game, the thought in my head was, here is the Eastern Conference Finals, and if it's my money and I'm putting it down on any team in the East right now, I'm still putting it down on Boston because I believe Brad Stevens will figure it out. I believe the players that we've just rattled off, especially the younger guys who haven't shot very well yet, will come together if Kyrie stays healthy. And we all know that's a big if, given the last few years. But if he does, he will help guide them offensively during those postseason stretches and during those big games. So I know there are a lot of people that are wavering on the Celtics' viability long-term this season. I'm not. I think they're still the team to beat. I like Toronto a lot. especially if Kawhi can stay on the floor and play the way he's been playing. But to me, it's Boston, Toronto, and then there's a gap between everybody else, like the Phillies or the Milwaukee's.
So that's a fair point.
Because Kawhi, I was going to say, I'm taking the Raptors because Kawhi was so far and away the best player on the court the other night, it wasn't even funny. And in a seven-game series where he can play big minutes, like, if he's that level of player, the Celtics, for all the talent they have, they don't ever get close to him. And they couldn't stop him the other night. I mean, he was just unbelievable. That was all I was going to say.
So I will point out, I think both of you guys made good points there. As you guys know, I've been infatuated with the Raptors. And that game the other night, Danny Green fouled out. How much time was left in that game?
3:48 or so.
That was a huge moment.
35 seconds by Tom Washington. Both terrible calls.
Well, whatever. The calls are the calls. But losing Danny Green was huge down the stretch. If they keep Danny Green, I think they win. And then also Siakam fouled out in overtime. Everybody knows Siakam's like my favorite player in the league. I will point this out about the Celtics. They've played a lot of tough games. They've had a very challenging schedule. I don't have the strength of schedule stuff in front of me.
They also had a long West Coast trip.
Yeah, you know, they've already played, I think, five or six West road games. So, their schedule coming up, which we're going to talk about tonight's game when they're playing Charlotte here in just a second. But their schedule coming up at Charlotte, you know, not a gimme. Knicks, Hawks, at Mavericks, at Pelicans. Again, that's, you know, Western road games, not easy. But Cavs, Timberwolves, Knicks again, Nick Friedel's Bulls. They have some games coming up that, you know, this week, for example, Monday, Charlotte, Wednesday, Knicks, who've lost five in a row, I believe, Friday, Hawks, you know.
It's a chance to fatten
up. That's a get healthy week a little bit for them. So the schedule, you know, puts, yes, Andrew.
As of the recording, Boston is 10th in strength of schedule so far.
So what do I know?
That's still pretty good. And I will say, Gordon Hayward, the last couple games, looked much better to me, moving around the court. And he looked much better than he did even a week ago. And I think if you are being an optimist on the Celtics, you would say that 2, 3, 4 months from now, he's going to look that much better. And that is, he is the one guy in particular that obviously, if he gets back anywhere near where he was before, that's a huge swing piece for them.
All right, so tonight they're playing the Charlotte Hornets. And for the first time in 2 years of this podcast, we're going to talk about the Hornets. I'm only slightly exaggerating. But specifically, I want to talk about Kemba Walker. Kemba is having a tremendous season. I will give you some of his stats. He is averaging 29 points a game, which is far and away a career high. He is shooting 46% overall from the field. Again, career high. And we're talking 15 games, but it's not nothing. He's also taken 21 shots a game, which is far and away a career high. Shooting 38% from three-point range, which is very solid. Has been awesome from the free throw line. And I think, you know, most importantly, he's been getting to the free throw line. A career high six times a game. He's had a few games where it's even been well above that. Averaging 6.1 assists per game, which ties a career high. Obviously, the other night, he had a 60-point game in an overtime loss to the Sixers. A tremendous start to the season. The Hornets are, well, I think they're 7-8. Have had some disappointing losses. Lost in Cleveland lopsidedly last week. This guy is a confounding player. Bontemps, you love him as a player. You said something to me earlier that I think is interesting, so I'll let you say it again here for all the people. Go ahead.
I think for the past 2 years he's been a better player than Kyrie Irving.
Come on now. Come on, Timmy. Who cares about the numbers? Who are you trusting when the game is on the line, when a big game is on the line? Kemba Walker hasn't played in a big game in 2 years. Are you out of your mind?
I don't think he's only played a couple playoff games.
Yeah, of course. come on. I love you. But damn, Kemba Walker is not a better player than Kyrie Irving. Oh, no.
If Kemba Walker, no. I mean, Kemba Walker has played on the Hornets. How has he had a chance to play?
Exactly. You're proving your point.
He's playing. No, but again, if Kyrie Irving was on the Hornets, where would they be?
Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't understand what the laughing is.
Because the Hornets have been an irrelevant team where Kemba Walker can do whatever he wants. Right, but he can do whatever he wants. He's not beholden to some system. Come on. Okay,
I mean, listen, you can laugh, but again, you're not looking at, you just look at the data. At the end of the day, it's not up to Kemba Walker. Isn't the one deciding who's on his team? Okay, so
understood.
Yes,
but
obviously,
but Kemba Walker on a bad team can do whatever he wants.
All
why
I'm
the numbers are inflated?
Okay, listen. I think if you look at Kemba and the production he has put up and the ability he has to shoot off the dribble from 30 to 35 feet now, almost like to the same range as like Steph at this point. I think he's been an unbelievable player there, playing on a team that, yes, he hasn't been able to play in huge games because his team stinks and has been completely mismanaged. That's not Kemba Walker's fault. Now if he had better players around him,
those numbers that you're saying are there, they wouldn't be close to what are there. I mean, you're saying, okay, well, put Kyrie on the Hornets. Put a healthy Kyrie on the Hornets, and he'd have insane numbers. Okay.
I'm not saying that I think Kemba's better just because he's had better numbers. I also don't think he's way better, like miles better than Kyrie. I just think if you look over the last couple of years watching him a lot, I think he's been unbelievable. And I think if he was on a team with real talent, they would have a chance to be damn good. And, for example, if the Lakers could somehow get Kemba Walker to play with LeBron James and be the what Kyrie Irving was in Cleveland, I think the Lakers should do anything they can to make that happen because I think he'd be a perfect fit, as an example.
Would you take Kyrie or Kemba Walker?
I would rather have Kemba Walker than Kyrie. But I also think you can make an art. Like, I understand the argument for Kyrie. I don't think this is like... I'm not saying this is like one guy stinks and one guy's good. I just personally think Kemba's a little better.
Let me just add this to be clear.
Fontems is saying that Kyrie stinks and Kemba's good.
That's right, Han. That's exactly what I'm saying. Verbatim.
Let me just toss this in there because I think this is relevant. I don't know how relevant. These are the games played the last 3 years for Kemba Walker. 81, 79, 80. And then this year he's obviously played in all 15 games.
It's definitely part of my argument. He's been much
healthier. They say the best ability is availability or whatever. Last 3 years for Kyrie, 53, 72, 60. And he's played in all... Well, he's missed one game this year, I think. I mean, there's some value in that. I don't know how much it is, but I think it's relevant in that Kemba's been healthier. To me, the real issue with Kemba is he's going to be a free agent, just like Kyrie will be. He's going to be a free agent this summer. He's the heart and soul. He's the only thing they really got. He's the only reason you would come to a game in Charlotte is to watch Kemba Walker play.
And most people still don't.
That's true. And they still lose.
He's been
the
only reason to watch a Hornets game since the team returned 15 years ago.
What about the occasional Michael sighting?
How dare you disparage what did they call God, I'm having a brain fart now. Who was the guy who crashed into the God guys, I am
You're not really giving us much to work with there, buddy.
He made the All-Star team. The Nets traded him for Damian Lillard.
Gerald Wallace.
Gerald Wallace. I knew Gerald. I should have said Gerald. What was his nickname? He always used to go flying into the crowd.
Crash?
They call him Crash, yeah.
Crash, right. All right, Jesus. I just proved against my point if I couldn't remember his name. why you watch a game.
Welcome to Charlotte Basketball.
I know. No, I just think it's welcome to too many things in my head. So Kemba is a free agent. He is making, let me look up his salary this year. He is not a max player. And even worse, he's less than a max player signed in 2015. His salary this year is $12 million. He signed a contract, an extension, a four-year, $48 million extension.
Ooh, Steph-like.
Actually, I think he's got an
same
opt-out,
same deal
actually.
As Lowry, I believe. I believe it's exactly the same deal. No, it's just a straight four. This should be the fourth year, I think.
No raises in the deal. He signed a flat deal, 12, 12, 12, 12. So he hasn't even gotten a raise, a contracted raise, in 4 years. So he's underpaid. He's dollar for dollar one of the best players in the league, probably top five in dollar for dollar.
There's a chance he might qualify for the Supermax, right? If they make the playoffs, he can make an All-NBA team, right?
So, you know, a lot of things are, you know, there's a lot of factors that come into that, injuries and whatnot. I would not think that he would be able to make the All-NBA team, but if there was an All-NBA team 15 games in, he would probably be one of the guys on the one of the six guards. I don't know if he will be at the end. He certainly right now could see that, but
yeah, I just
think it's about
the playoffs. At least he'll have a shot, you know, which it looks like in the East with the way some of these teams are playing early on, he'll have a shot at least.
Yeah. So right now his max is 5 years, 100 and about 190, 195 million. Is, you know, there's going to be immense pressure from the Hornets to pay that. The Hornets are a team that I'm going to tell you right now is one of the biggest money losers in the league. They are dependent. They've received more financial aid from their counterparts, their other 29 teams, than any team in the league in the last 5-6 years. They have Nick Batum, and this is one of the things why, you know, if you're Michael Jordan, you're a little bit nervous giving out a max contract. You got Nick Batum on a max contract, one of the most questionable maxes given out in NBA history. Can you give Kemba Walker, a guy who is the heart and soul of your franchise, but has not proven to be a difference-making player in terms of wins and losses? I mean, he's won them many games, but he's not carried them into the playoffs. He's played, I think, in three
playoff series
in his
right?
career. I think it's two playoff series, 11 playoff games. I think he's got.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I was only remembering the 7-game series against the Heat in 16 before they then paid Nick Batum all the money to watch an overtime game against the Sixers the other night.
Right. He made the playoffs in 13-14. They got swept by the Heat, I believe.
Ah, that's right.
So he's played 11 playoff games. I don't want to say anything bad about him, but he's not a guy who can carry you to the playoffs. Do you give Kemba Walker $200 million?
Well, I think you could.
Mr. Bontemps, I want to hear this one.
Mr. Bontemps,
no,
I think
listen,
the answer would be yes.
Well, listen, I would say it depends on where your team is, right? Like, does it make sense for the Charlotte Hornets to pay Kemba Walker until he's 33? For a team that clearly is going nowhere? No. That's why I wrote in January they should have traded him last year and really got a big return for him. But, again, if I'm the Lakers looking for a guy to pair with LeBron, or I'm one of these teams going into the summer looking for a star player.
He will turn 29 in May.
Yeah. I mean, look, if it's me, well, let me ask you this, Nick. Who would you bet on better? Who would you be more willing to bet on a four-year deal coming up, Jimmy Butler or Kemba Walker?
Ooh.
But it's not a four-year deal. It's a five-year deal.
No, no, no. I'm saying if you're another team going to sign, I don't think the Hornets should sign him. I think they should trade him. The Hornets are going nowhere. They should have traded him.
I don't think there's any way they're going to trade him.
I don't think they are either.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying if you're another team that has the option to say, we could sign Jimmy Butler or Kemba Walker. Say you're the, I don't know, whatever, the Nets, right, who want a star player. Who would you be better? Who do you think you're better off?
Kemba Walker would be amazing in Brooklyn. Oh my God! They would go crazy. They would go crazy. Well, the Brooklyn fans that there are would go crazy
right.
if Kemba Walker came to New York.
Or Kemba Walker with the Knicks.
Charlotte
was going
to give an answer. Just sit right there.
If it's me, Timmy, I'm still taking Jimmy because Jimmy's one of the very best two-way players in the league. But to your point and to B's point regarding injuries, that is what is terrifying. If I'm one of these teams that has money and that has space and can offer one of these extensions to either one of these guys, I mean, that to me, I'm not as high on Kemba Walker, not close as to what you are, but the fact that he's out there, that is huge. And my biggest concern for Jimmy, as somebody who's followed him since he came into the league, is Jimmy can play at an unbelievably high level when he's healthy, but he misses a month every year. And after all the wear and tear on those knees, from all those minutes under Tibbs, how are those knees going to hold up over the next 4 or 5 years? I mean, we're going to see. But Jimmy misses a month every season with a variety of different injuries. It's happened the last few years. When he's there, he can really help. When he's not, he's not good for the team. So I would still take Jimmy because I believe much more strongly that Jimmy is a much more complete player who gets you closer. But Kemba Walker being on the floor is something that you can't take away from him, although I think on a much better team with much better players, he's not putting up close to the production that we've seen him put up in Charlotte the last couple of years.
There are general managers in this league, and they would never say this with their name attached to it, but they've said it to me without their name attached to it, is that it's really hard to get difference-making play in a playoff setting from a guy who's 6 foot. Obviously, there are some outliers there, but that's one of the things that Chris Paul has struggled with at times in his career.
Yep.
And people forget Steph Curry actually has, Steph Curry is significantly bigger than Kemba Walker. And Steph Curry is the greatest shooter of all time, and he's perfected an ability to get a shot off over height, the way he shoots on the way up. But I don't even think it comes down to player evaluation as much as it does. Can Charlotte tell whatever fans that it is getting? I mean, what message would it send to them if they do not pay it? Because one of the things, this happened with Al Horford. So it's happened with other players too, but Al Horford comes to the front of mind. Al Horford wanted a 5-year max from the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks were not willing to give him a 5-year max. They're willing to give him a 5-year contract, and they're willing to give him more money than anybody else, but they would not give him a 5-year max. And so he had a handful of 4-year max offers. Could have gone to Oklahoma City, could have gone to Philadelphia? But certainly Washington, and then obviously went to Boston. And he was for less guaranteed money, but he was sort of insulted that the organization didn't give a 5-year max when he had been, the heart and soul of that team for a long time, an all-star, etc. And so in a situation like Kemba Walker, there are teams out there who are in the free agent market who will offer him a 4-year max. I have little doubt that he will get offered a 4-year max, especially for a team that ends up with a chair, when the music stops, ends up without a chair, when Durant and Kawhi and, Jimmy and some other guys come off the board and Clay comes off the board, maybe it's the Lakers, maybe it's the 76ers, depending what happens with Jimmy. But there's a team that I think he's going to get a 4-year offer. But will it come down to whether or not, he wants that 5-year max and whether or not they can commit to giving him, almost $50 million when he's 33, 34. And for an organization like Charlotte, you make a mistake on that, you can sink the entire franchise. So it's a really big, difficult decision. And I know it's not at the front of people's minds because even in the scheme of this summer, Kemba's, not even really a top 5 free agent. But he could really end up being an important player in an important swing. I don't know what you do. Not only that, Kemba has spent the last year giving Valentines to the Charlotte market.
Ryan,
yes.
Let's talk about Charlotte's conundrum on whether to pay Kemba, the Supermax or whatever 5-year max contract. Sort of makes me wonder about another point guard not too far up the road. I don't. Is Washington far up the road from Charlotte or not? I have no idea.
It's not far. It's not far.
But there's a situation up there that's pretty bad too.
So let me just tell you what just happened there. This is the producer coming in and saying, "My God, we have to get people through this podcast." And there's this Adrian Wojnarowski story about the Wizards, and you're going on and on about Kemba Walker. What the producer should just say is, Brian, enough about Kemba Walker. How about we talk about the Wizards? Because when people want to listen to this podcast later, this is going to be the story they want to talk to. So you should just say that, Andrew. Don't be nice. Just come in with the hammer. Adrian Wojnarowski has a story out that basically says that the Wizards are making everybody on their roster available.
Finally! What has taken them so long to get to this point?
Well, the Go Wizards ahead. Don't ever do anything quick. I'll just say that.
Well, that's true. So, Nick, what's your other than that initial reaction? What's your thoughts on that?
This should have happened a couple years ago. I mean, B, we were talking about this before the season. The
I was going to say Friedel was lighting things up on the pod before the year began.
Yeah, I mean, the Wizards, they're not good enough. They haven't been good enough. I mean, you can make everybody available, but the guy you need to be willing to move is Brad Beal. And that's it. You're not moving John Wall's deal. I mean, Otto Porter, is he going to get you that much? Are you ready to move Brad Beal? That's what it boils down to for me from a distance. But this Wizards group, I mean, my God, yeah. They're not good. They haven't been good enough in several years. You've attached yourself to this albatross contract. You got to make some moves and hit the button. If I'm a Wizards fan, and granted, there are not a lot of those out there, it seems, either. If you're a Wizards fan, this should have happened years ago. I mean, this core was not
well,
good
remember.
Enough.
They had a couple of playoff runs where they were borderline. I could see why they stuck.
Where they all wore black and everybody got hyped up. Big deal. Big deal.
They're 5-11.
Shocker.
And not really improving. I mean, they've had some blips. The challenge with what, well, Tim, you know what the challenge is with trading John Wall.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, in my previous job, I paid a lot of attention to the Wizards, obviously, and this is something people have talked about for a while. Now, I will push back on Nick a little bit. I think you can move John's contract. I think you can trade him. I think the talk that he is untradeable, I just don't really buy.
What are you getting back, Timmy? What are you getting back?
Well, here's the well, this is what I was going to say. I don't know if you're going to get a lot back for him, but I think the comparable for this is when Danny Ferry took over the Hawks back in 2012. What was the first thing he did? He went to the Nets and he traded Joe Johnson for essentially a pick swap and a bag of balls, right?
It was a bunch of expiring contracts, a first-round pick, and a pick swap, right?
I don't know if they got – I think they got a swap. I don't remember if they got a first. But they definitely got a bag of balls and a swap. Because all the expiring guys were not good, and it was just to balance out the money. It was Chris Humphries,
wait,
and Sean Stevenson,
John
and a couple other people.
John Wall is less tradable than Blake Griffin was when he was with the Clippers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he's less tradable, but I mean, again, the thing, Han, is you're talking about 4 years and $170 million after this. So
yeah, let me give you
that's an even bigger number than what Blake was on.
This
Blake
year, John Wall
sell. Same money.
That's a great point, though, Andrew. If you can, I mean, first off, the comparison to Joe Johnson is good because Joe Johnson was in a contract that a lot of people thought was going to be difficult to trade, and they basically traded it for cap space.
Yeah.
And Blake was sort of kind of came out of nowhere, and I think actually was looking like a pretty good trade. So here's, you know what that trade was? You ready for this? So it was done in the summer. So, and there was, it's important to recognize this was done in the summer because you could make
a
five
June
for 20, one.
It was about June 28th because they wanted to have him locked in for Darren Williams to convince Darren Williams to stay as part of the
right. But they did the deal in July.
Right.
So, But the point, the reason this is relevant is because in the summer you can have up to 20 guys on your roster. You don't have to, you can do a 5-for-1 trade and you can pull that off. So here was what Joe Johnson was sent for: Jordan Farmar, Johan Petro, Anthony Morrow, Jordan Williams, Deshaun Stevenson, in a sign and trade. Boy, he got some free money. Deshaun Stevenson got some free money there. A future first round pick, lottery protected, and a pick swap.
Championship.
I'm reading this story, by the way. You'll love this next sentence, Tim, because Tim used to cover the Nets for the New York Post. The Nets managed to keep promising guard Marshawn Brooks out of the trade.
Yep.
Was considered promising.
Marshawn Brooks taking 5 spots ahead of Jimmy Butler. Would have looked pretty good for the Nets now.
And the key thing to think about John Wall, he makes $19 million this year. So keep that in mind for trade purposes. Next year he makes 38, 41, 44, 47. Almost 4 years.
It's like a Powerball annuity.
Give me Blake Griffin every day over that contract.
And so I do think it's movable, but it would be a challenge. But like I could see a team like Miami maybe making a trade for him. I could see a team like Phoenix maybe making a trade for him. There'd be a team in a similar position to Detroit thinking, hey, if we can get a star and we have him locked in and he's going to be here and he needs to change his scenery. Like, I could see somebody talking themselves into it.
A couple of things. So number one, the difference between Joe Johnson there is that the overall salary number is it's relatively manageable. So you don't have to get a lot, but here's what Zach Lowe has pointed out, which is that he's got a 15% trade kicker.
Which is a lot of money. I believe 15% of $170 million, and actually be $190 million, would be what, $30 million trade kicker?
Who is John's agent?
That's a lot.
Who is John's agent be? Rich Paul. Shout out to Rich Paul. Oh my God.
Yes. Now I have to point out that trade kickers are waivable. Or amendable. He could amend it down to 5%.
That kind of gives
him some control
over where he goes.
Of where he would get traded. So that's a long way of saying that I think it's going to be difficult. By the way, I don't think Blake had a trade kicker. Is that right?
I don't think he did. But I'll look.
We would have heard about that because that would have been huge.
To go back to Nick's point before, talking to people around the league, Bradley Beal's a guy people around the league have been looking at for a while, waiting to see if the Wizards will really blow things up, because Beal is a guy on a great contract that people would, I think, be willing to throw in their lot to get. And frankly, even though he would have, I think, been a much better fit for Philly than the guy that just traded for would be long term.
Thank you. Very good point, Bontemps. Nick, do you have to go catch your flight?
I have a couple more minutes, but it's getting close.
Okay. Let me just say this. So I think that's a long way of saying is I think John Wall's a hard player to trade. Bradley Beal makes $25 million. I wonder if they had made this decision, as Nick indicated a while ago, especially last summer, the players that have been traded that Bradley Beal could have been traded for, including Kawhi Leonard, I got to believe that the Spurs would have taken Bradley Beal over DeMar DeRozan. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. But they didn't get offered him.
Now, granted,
the second time that Bradley Beal could have been traded for another star, and the Wizards didn't do it, because didn't OKC offer Harden for Bradley Beal way back?
Well, that's what they want. The OKC wanted Beal.
OKC either asked for the third pick or Beal before Beal's rookie year, and then the Wizards said no.
But you know, there's an opportunity cost having done it now. Like, boy, I mean, Nick, I mean, who would? What's even the trade? What's even the Bradley Beal trade right now?
Well, I don't know, but I feel like
if I was the Lakers, I would open up the store for Bradley Beal.
Me too.
I would rather have him than any of the Lakers' young guys by a lot.
Me too.
guys, this last like 2 month stretch in the league is a case study in GMs waiting too long to trade assets that they should have unloaded months before or a year ago. I mean, between the Wizards news and Jimmy finally getting moved a week ago, sell early. Don't
wait. Same thing with Kemba, right?
I mean, like your boys,
exactly.
If the Hornets had traded Kemba last year at the deadline, imagine what they could have got for him with a year and a half to go. Could have got a ton.
Imagine,
right.
Look at your boys, the Bulls. They sold early on Jimmy.
Garn Pax, baby. Ahead of their time.
Garn Pax, trendsetters.
Ahead of their time.
You remember way back when Utah did the Deron Williams deal? They moved early on Deron Williams, too. Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for it. I don't know. Tim, what do you think of, I mean, could we mention the Lakers? What other landing spots for Bradley Beal could we see out there?
I mean, I always thought Philly was the most logical one and the one I would have thrown in my lot for. If I was them, I would have offered up the farm. Obviously now, you know, I think that's tougher unless Washington's interested in Markel Fultz, which they probably are not at that level. I think the Lakers would be an incredible fit. I would, like I just said, I'd give up all the young guys for him. I think that would be a great landing spot. You know, obviously a team like New Orleans who wants to keep Anthony Davis, you know, you would look at them and say, hey, he would make sense there, but they don't have the pieces.
Not right now.
Either. I mean, the Lakers are the one that stand out to me that really, like, they have the assets and the need that you say, hey, like, we lock in with Bradley Beal with this team. Also, I would think if you have Bradley Beal there with LeBron, it makes it even more likely you can convince somebody to come there this summer, too.
It mucks up their cap space, but...
A little bit, but if you trade Ingram and Lonzo for him, you're already shaving off a bunch of that money anyway.
Right. So, would
they have a third spot? Would they have a third spot? Let's say they find some way to what you guys are saying. The Lakers find some way to land Beal. Do they have... Could they make the moves to carve out a third, either max spot or close to a max spot?
Well, they have their first round pick, which is important in terms of if they would have to get rid of a contract that they don't want. That sort of opens some things up.
They'd have to do some. They'd have to do some gymnastics. I think it's safe to say.
So. For the sake of argument, let's say they traded. I don't know if they're giving Ingram and Ball. I think I'd want Ingram and Kuzma.
I mean, I don't think they're getting Bradley Beal without giving up the farm, personally.
Okay. All right. For the sake of this argument, we'll say they give up Ingram and Ball. Okay. That would be a net gain. So Ingram and Ball next year are slated to make $15 million combined. And Bradley Beal. By the way, the Wizards are a taxpayer, which is not good. I mean, if I'm gonna say one thing for sure, Wizards are getting under the tax. I don't know if they're gonna trade Bradley Beal.
Ted Leonsis said he thought they were gonna win 50 games and make the conference finals. That was his expectation. And Ted never did stuff like that before. But listen, you see a story like this, I think that's very clear where this is coming from, right? Like Ted has spent money the last 2 years. He paid the tax last year. He's paying the tax again. Like, I think that's a lot of where this comes from. Like, hey, let's go. And he also just won the cup with the hockey team. So perhaps he's, you know, become a bit more aggressive than he was in the past.
So their net difference. So Ball and Ingram next year make about $16 million, and so if you offloaded them in the deal, Bradley Beal makes $27 million. So they would have about $29 million in cap space if they made that trade. So they would have to get to the max is going to be about $38 million for a 10-year max player. You know, if you want
they'd have
Kevin
to do,
Durant,
they'd have to do some gymnastics for sure.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, Bradley Beal with LeBron would be pretty incredible though.
Why Bradley Beal?
He would have been so good.
There's no other obvious suitors for Bradley Beal. There's no one that's quite as easy as Elliot. Which is
all right, Nick, go catch your plane. Thank you very much, Nick. And
all right, guys.
We'll, so
all right, buddy. See you in a couple weeks.
Let's workshop this. All right. So if it's not the Lakers, who else is calling the Wizards after seeing Woj's story? Because that's how Woj works. Woj's story comes out.
Portland.
What's? I mean, I just don't see the fit there, really. What are they going to do, offer back CJ McCollum? Like,
pretty much. That's what it would be. Just, I mean, I don't change the scenery for people.
Yeah. I mean, New Orleans would be. New Orleans is a team for all these things that you go, hey, they need a guy, but it's hard to see what they the piece they add.
Well, this
Milwaukee,
is the thing. New Orleans made an offer,
but they don't really have a guy.
Well, New Orleans made an offer for Jimmy Butler, and it was essentially, Minnesota asked for Drew Holiday, but it was essentially Mirotić and something else. Mirotić and Etuan Moore, Mirotić and Solomon Hill. I don't see that getting it done.
No.
Even if you included a first round pick.
No. No.
So, all right. Like, there, I mean, there's certain places I think would be interesting. Like, for example, think about Memphis. But how does Memphis get it done?
Well, more than Memphis, think about if Milwaukee could get it done.
Milwaukee is the one that would make it would be great, but again, they just don't really have the assets.
Right. Well,
they can't trade their two main guys.
Well,
and you want to add him to the that.
Right.
It's not.
I mean,
have him be.
Middleton is a free agent to be. That would be a rental. You know, I don't see why that would even. The trade would have to be. Would have to include Eric Bledsoe.
Milwaukee doesn't have a trade that makes sense unless they're just offering up like multiple future unprotected first round picks, and even that I don't know if that really makes a ton of sense. Philly
Washington
was the obvious
now.
Fit. I mean, Boston would be a pretty great.
Boston, what's the trade? Jaylen Brown.
Well, I mean, the Celtics have a million picks. They have Jaylen Brown. They have lots of stuff, but. I think they're saving their powder for a potential Anthony Davis trade, so I don't think they're going all in on a Beal trade.
Right. Well, you could trade Beal for Anthony Davis. Better.
You could.
You know. I mean, you'd have to include Marcus Smart, I think, in the deal just to make the money work. But what about Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown and one of their picks?
That's a decent deal. I mean, that's
very. This is very amusing because, Bontemps, wasn't your podcast debut towards the end where we got bogged down by Bradley Beal trades?
And I believe so. That is exactly what happened.
Later, here we are again.
Are we bogged
exactly
down?
We talked, about Bradley Beal to the Lakers. That was exactly what we talked about.
Bradley Beal trades at that time with no public indication that he would be traded. And the morning that Bontemps is on again, there happens to be a report now that Washington is willing to move Bradley Beal.
This is just going to become our gimmick now, Han.
Is there any market for Otto Porter?
I think there's a market for him, but again, it's one of those things where, you know, could you trade it? Like, he would make a ton of sense for a team like New Orleans, so, or a team like Milwaukee. Like, do you take Henson and Dellavedova and, you know, a first and maybe a swap or something with Milwaukee, something like that.
I mean, it's not a great trade. Well, I would want Thon Maker just because you're hoping for like a prospect, but
take some bad money, right? Maybe they take some bad money. You know, maybe you could probably do the same thing with John again, like you said with the Joe Johnson trade. You take on some dead money. You take on, maybe you get a pick and a swap, and you take on some bad money from somebody.
So, I mean, I think the real thing comes down to, is Washington willing to salary dump a guy like Otto Porter?
Yeah.
Maybe the answer is yes.
That's a great question.
Maybe the answer is yes.
I mean,
I don't know.
This is uncharted territory for the Wizards. I mean, in a lot of ways. Because, I mean, Ted Leonsis has had the same front office for a long time. He did the same thing with his hockey team. He doesn't make changes. He doesn't blow things up. The Caps just won a cup with Alex Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom to go way in depth here. Two longtime stars that he never traded, just like Beal and Wall. But you know, if they really do decide to blow it up, you know, I think if they're going to do that, they're going to have to take on some bad salary because especially for Porter and Wall, I don't think there are a ton of trade options for him.
Well, Oubre also has some value. The problem is Oubre is on his rookie deal, doesn't make a lot of money. You're not going to get much for him, and the team that will be trading for him would have to be agreeing to pay him. And, you know, I think Oubre is a, I don't know. But Oubre is a guy who could possibly be traded.
He's fine. Just to button up this topic from before, Blake Griffin, in fact, did have a 15% trade kicker. His 5-year deal is worth 172 now.
And the team that trades the player pays the kicker, right?
I guess maybe Ballmer just wrote the check and never looked back.
That's a change in the newest CBA. I think the trading team pays that kicker, which is why the Wizards are
the team that gives the player up, right?
Yes.
Right, Andrew? Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
And maybe Ballmer's like, I want him off my cap sheet. Here's the money.
Maybe Ted just decides to bite the bullet.
Oh, I don't think that's happening. When has that ever happened?
Well, I mean, like I said, he paid the tax. People never thought he'd pay the tax. He paid the tax last year, and he's paying it again. At least for now.
Well, however this trade machination turns out, clearly we have to wait until December 15th when a lot of these one-year contracts or recently signed guys come.
Yeah, this isn't something that would happen fast anyway. They're trying to draw out the market. Well, more to come. If you're out there traveling right now on Thanksgiving, thank you for listening. I hope you get to your destination safely and enjoy your holiday. Thank you, Tim Bontemps. We'll say thank you to Nick Friedel, who's on his way to San Antonio Airport. And we'll say thank you to Andrew Hahn and to Kyrie. And have a good day, everybody.